Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimebo.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with NFL Shop Europe. We're sponsored by DraftKings.co.uk, your home of one-day fantasy sports. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds, joined as ever by my co-partner, my co-host? Co-host or co-partner, Jeff? Doesn't really matter.
Hey, I just want to be on the team. You can tell me what I am, coach. Just give me a role.
All right. So we are going to talk about the 2017 NFL Draft. And first of all, Jeff, we won't dig into every single pick, but we want to talk about teams that did well, teams that didn't fare so well. But first of all, the city of Philadelphia just looked like incredible scenes there on the rocky steps. I mean, what was it? 100,000 people on the first night. What did you make of Philadelphia hosting the draft?
Well, I thought it was phenomenal, and I really think there are only two things missing about the draft. As you evaluate the draft, what the city of Philadelphia did, the way they put it on, I mean, it was incredible. There were just two things missing, and that's you and me.
Absolutely.
But I tell you, it was great. I thought even the commissioner, when he got on stage, and he gets a Philadelphia cheer, which, like, you got to understand, listeners, these people booed Santa Claus. Swear to God, at a the Eagles game, they booed Santa Claus. Well, they booed the commissioner, and he said, like, bring it on, Philadelphia. So I thought it set the tone for the draft. I thought it was phenomenal and great TV, you know, great intrigue. It's just what the draft always is.
Yeah, Jeff, I watched the draft on the NFL Network coverage, and fortunately, I kind of threw Twitter away, so I was able to watch it as things unfolded, and that's the best way to watch it. And I like the way NFL Network do it now. They don't tip the picks. They don't kind of give you that insider information. They don't show the prospect. I mean, a few years back, we had the prospect on the telephone just before their name was called. Completely took away the surprise element of the draft. And to have that back and to watch it almost as a fan was great. There is so much drama around an NFL draft every year, isn't there?
Yeah, you know, and I tweeted the first round of it, and I'm going to tell you something. It was exactly like you say. I mean, it just, there's so much going on, and the suspense of not knowing who that pick's going to be until they open the envelope and the commissioner calls the name. I think that's a way better way to do it. Mm-hmm. I think the fans, certainly, you look at the viewing numbers, Neil. I mean, the viewing numbers were outstanding, and you know, you're talking about the NFL draft getting higher numbers than, you know, playoffs in other sports, you know, the hockey playoffs and the NBA playoffs. I mean, that's phenomenal. You're talking about the draft now.
Jeff, it was supposed to be, and we'll get into some of the individual picks in just a moment. This was supposed to be the best defensive draft in a generation, certainly in a number of years. And actually, when you look down the numbers, it was defense heavy as the first round played out. But it was interesting to me as I was watching the first round unfold. I was like, this is still quite an offense-driven league. 7 of the first 10 picks were offensive players, skill position players, no linemen in there. And we saw 3 teams, and I want to get to the Bears extensively in just a moment, but we saw 3 teams who traded up to grab quarterbacks. So there was still quite a lot of offense early on. Maybe they just didn't feel it was as deep for offense, so you had to get those guys early.
Well, exactly, Neil. That is exactly what happened. Because let's say you have a smaller pool at a position or a side of the ball. And receiver, I think, was a pretty good indication. Mm. When a guy goes early, then if you're a team that needs receivers, the pool shrinks. So you're going to think, I got to get that, you know, because really, if you look at it, you know, Juju Schuster was on the cusp of a first-round guy. You know, I thought Williams, you know, the kid from Western Michigan, Davis, those guys were the guys. But it wasn't very much beyond that. Mm. And so when one of them went and, you know, Western Michigan guy goes right now it becomes even more important that you – take a receiver, because you can't risk that he's going to be there the next time your name is called. So I think it created a run on offensive players early, and then it settled back into what the draft really was, which is a defensive deep draft, and particularly in the secondary.
We got our first real wow factor, Jeff, with the second overall pick, and I actually was watching the TV and uttered the words wow when we heard Mitchell Trubisky's name mentioned by the commissioner, the quarterback out of North Carolina. He goes second overall. So the Chicago Bears moved up, Jeff. Just got the notes. So they moved up. They didn't give up huge amounts when you think about how other teams moved up to grab their quarterback. They give up first round picks. The Bears gave up a third and a fourth rounder this year, which was 67th and 111th overall. They gave up a third rounder next year, which was just for the 2018 draft. They're going to hope that he's more Marcus Mariota or Carson Wentz as a number two overall than Robert Griffin III or Ryan Leaf. But I think the issue, Jeff, and I saw the reaction from Bears fans, and they were like, oh no, a quarterback. And apparently Trubisky got booed at an ice hockey game this weekend, and it's not his fault that he got drafted. I think it's the fact that it's not necessarily what the Bears gave up, but maybe they didn't need to give up anything at all because they would have been picking third overall. What was your take on what Chicago did with Trubisky?
Well, it's just, first of all, your comment when you saw it was exactly my comment on Twitter. If you go back and look at my Twitter feed, I was like, wow. Mm. That was the first thing I said. It was a shocker to me because you're looking at quarterbacks are always going to be overvalued in the draft, always, because of the nature of the position and the need and all of it. But for them to move at all, even though it's one spot, for them to move at all, they had to have been outmaneuvered by San Francisco and John Lynch. We'll get into that later. But, you know, there was that sense that, oh, my God, if San Francisco takes him, what do? And so now they move up, give up value. And you know, you think that the 61st pick and 111th or whatever, you know, those picks in that, that's where you make your money in the draft.
Right.
That's the meat of your draft. Everybody gets all excited about the first round because it's the sexiest round, but you ought to be able to pick the first round. Right. It's who can do it beyond that. Now, so you lose assets to move one spot to get a guy that you're – I'm going to say this. I really believe that Ryan Pace has put his career on the line with this move. It's like playing poker, and you're just going to move all your chips to the middle of the table and say, okay, let's see what card I get. And, you know, again, the tough thing for me is – and this is – I'm really intrigued by this one, Neil – was immediately – what came out of Chicago was that John Fox didn't even know that they were going to go that way until minutes before the draft.
Right.
And then all of a sudden the damage control came that was like, no, we had known weeks ahead of time and all that stuff. I just really it was a head scratcher to me.
Well, and I think where it's become more frustrating, and again, hindsight is a wonderful thing, but if you read Peter King, who was in the draft room with the San Francisco 49ers, clearly the Niners were open for business and they were happy to do business with the Bears. But if you read that article, Jeff, it doesn't look like anyone else was ringing the phone off the hook to do a deal with the 49ers. So I think that's where it's partly frustrating as well for the Bears, in that they probably could have stayed pat at number three and still taken Trubisky. And the other thing to factor in here, and this is so interesting, Mike Glennon was the guest of honor at the Bears draft party, Jeff. Imagine that when he hears that name called. He said on the night, it feels like I've been cheated on. This is a guy they signed to a 3-year, $45 million deal. Now, there are always ways out of contracts for teams, but $18.5 million of that was guaranteed. It didn't feel like Mike Glennon was just going to be a 1-year stopgap, which now you've got to believe he is.
Well, you know what? All of it speaks to what, Neil? It speaks to there's dysfunction there.
Yeah.
Why would you
and desperation.
Ask a guy? Yeah. Why would you ask a guy who you just signed to stand there at your not at some, you know, local restaurant's draft party or, you know, some Nike draft party. This is your draft party as the Chicago Bears. You know what you're going to do. And you're going to put that kid in front of people and then, with your first pick, draft a guy at his position. I mean, I just look at that and I go, are you kidding me? I just don't get it. That's not good ball. And you know, I just, like I said, I think if Trubisky can come in and play and be a good player, then it looks like the greatest move of all time. Mm. If he can't and he is what we think he is, which is a good player with very limited experience as a starter, even in college football, and he struggles, then you're opening the kid up for, you know, the scrutiny and the, you know, look what that has done to some players historically. Ryan Leaf's one of the ones you talk about. Mm. And the expectation of the fan base is now on him, and he doesn't perform, and so now he's vilified. I mean, it's just, there's so much about it that can go wrong, and every pick, Neil, is a risk versus reward pick. But this one, I think, is Ryan Pace. Is, like I said, he's put all his chips in the middle of the table.
Yeah, and in the meantime, he has to have an awkward conversation with Mike Glennon and assure him that he's his guy for 2017.
Yeah, and you know what? Here's the thing, too, and this is again where it kind of gets lost in all this. The sad part is, who else is going to pay the price for this? Because another year of, you know, 6-10 in Chicago,
Foxy's
that gone. Probably means. That means Foxy's out of there, and they're going to have a whole new staff, and then that guy is going to have to come in and try and, you know, make a player of Trubisky, and, you know, it's not his guy. I mean, there's a lot of things about this that you just shake your head.
Mm. Let's stick with quarterbacks, Jeff, before we move on to dig a bit deeper into the draft. And another big wow moment in the first round came in the 10th spot when the Kansas City Chiefs traded all the way up from 27 to 10. You knew it was going to be for a quarterback, if you were giving up that much collateral. They gave up their first-round draft pick for next season, and it wasn't Deshaun Watson, as they were talking about on the coverage, but it was Patrick Mahomes from Texas Tech. There was our buddy Lee Steinberg pumping his fist, sitting next to him. Two back-to-back first-round quarterbacks for Lee in as many years, so he is officially back. But this, Jeff, I think, again, it's the same situation. You know, Alex Smith is the starter for 2017, I'm sure of that, but it starts the clock ticking on his exit from Kansas City, because you don't give up that much for a guy that you're saying is going to be a 4 or 5 year backup for you. That's just not reality.
No, and I think that I think this is an indication of how a team plans for the future well. Mm-hmm. Because if you look at your roster, and if you feel your roster is such that you can, you know, withstand having your first pick be a guy who you're going to wait a year, 2 years, you know, to be a player, it's worth it at that position. Mm. Because once you have one in your hand, it's like that, you know, the a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush old saying. I mean, that's the way it is. And you know that a guy like this, Mahomes, with all that physical talent that he has, Neil, they don't come down the road every day. Mm. And so you're in a position now where you can draft him, you can groom him, you don't have to put pressure on him to start right away. He can learn behind a veteran. He can get this. I mean, it's so much easier, so much better way for that kid to blossom as an NFL player than to put him in a team that, this is what happens a lot of times with first-round quarterbacks that are drafted real early. They go to bad teams. Mm. And then, you have no players around them and bad offensive lines, and then all of a sudden you got David Carr. And that's just, I think this is a great draft by Kansas City. It's funny because I had sent Lee a message before the draft trying to get Patrick on our show.
Yeah.
And Lee's son sent me back a message, said, I'm sorry, it's not going to be possible. Lee's going to be down with the family. And he said, we anticipate a great day on draft day. And I think they kind of knew this was coming.
Yeah. I think it's going to be an interesting one to see how it plays out, Jeff, because I know Alex Smith, and I think Alex is one of the classiest guys in the NFL. He will be a good soldier. He will tutor Mahomes the right way, but obviously he's a competitor as well. He's not going to want to lose his starting job. But here's a quarterback who has been accused of being too cautious at times. I mean, we've sat together and talked about how dink and dunk the Kansas City Chiefs are at times. He's going to be mentoring what's by all accounts is an absolute cannon-armed gunslinger. It's going to be fascinating to see how it plays out. But I do think, although if he was to tell you in private he was upset, I don't think Alex Smith will rock the boat.
No, I don't think so. And you know what? It's... you think about kids, you know, and how this, all these picks, you know, the kind of ripples that go out. You talked about Mike Glennon. Imagine Alex Smith. He's won a lot of NFL football games, right? He's done a lot of really good things in his career. And he's picked first by San Francisco. Then they go get Colin Kaepernick, and he's goes to Kansas City. Mm. Now Kansas City draft. It's like, come on, man. What do I got to do? I guess is the way he's looking at it. But I agree with you. I think he's that kind of kid. He'll be a great leader. He'll be a great mentor. I think it's a perfect situation now. Again, and you look at Andy Reid, too, and I think this is important. Fans got to remember this. Who was the offensive coordinator for a chunk of Favre's career in Green Bay and was an offensive line coach, was an offensive assistant there for most of Favre's career, and then he goes to Philadelphia for his first head coaching job, and who's his quarterback? Donovan McNabb, who, again, was one of those kinds of guys, right, that, you know, wasn't afraid to throw it in tight windows and, you know, certainly was not a game manager. So he has experience with these kinds of guys, and he's had success with these kinds of guys.
You mentioned Alex Smith. All he does is win, Jeff. Since he's been in Kansas City, only Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers have more wins than Alex Smith, but he just hasn't been able to convince people that he's exciting. I think that's why everyone's always looking for what's next down the road when it came to Alex Smith, whether it's Colin Kaepernick or now Mahomes. And you know, but the guy's a winner, and I think if he moves on from Kansas City, and what, he's only 33.
Yeah,
I mean, if he moves on at the age of 34, he's got five decent years left. There'll be a queue.
I agree with you, Neil. And you know, it's the same thing about Andy Reid. I mean, you don't, when you think of dynamic coaches, you know, Andy Reid's not that guy that comes to your mind.
Right.
But if you just look at his record, I mean, look what he's done. Every place he's been. And so if you're really just evaluating on wins, and that's what we say the bottom line is, you got to say Kansas City, you're lucky to have both those guys.
Let's round out the quarterbacks in round one, then we'll talk about some of the teams. So Deshaun Watson goes to Houston at 12th overall. So the Cleveland Browns trade down to 25th in round one. So now we know the full cost of the Brock Osweiler mistake, Jeff. It cost Houston... in terms of 2016 salary, it cost them $21 million. They had to swap first-round picks with the Cleveland Browns in this draft, and they had to give up their first-round and second-round picks in 2018. I mean, Rick Smith can dance from the rafters all he likes that he signed Deshaun Watson, and now they've got their quarterback of the future, but it didn't come without losing a few lumps along the way.
Well, no question, Neil, and that's a long term. There's years of ramifications for a mistake like that or a miss like that, and I think to say that Deshaun Watson is your franchise quarterback of the future, he's not Peyton Manning, and he's not Andrew Luck, and he's not now. Can he be a very good quarterback in this league? I think so. He's got a winning pedigree. He's got athleticism. He's got enough arm. You know, he's got intelligence. He's got leadership qualities. He's got all that stuff. But he's not one that when you look at him on tape, you say, well, that guy, look at the accuracy. For example, when you watch Peyton Manning at Tennessee, you say, wow.
Yeah.
Not a great athlete. Doesn't move well in the pocket. Some of those things. But look at the accuracy. Look at the decision-making, right? Now, you see flashes of that with all of these quarterbacks we're talking about, but you don't see consistent performance like that. Andrew Luck at Stanford, same deal.
Well, that's
You look at those guys. Those guys are the kind you go, yes, that's worth trading up for.
Well, and that's the key, Jeff, with all of these quarterbacks. If I'd have said to you, Andrew Luck, you'd have said, I know that guy is going to be good in the NFL. If I'd said Peyton Manning, you'd say, I know. When you just talked about Deshaun Watson there, you say, I think he can be a good quarterback in the NFL. There's a big difference there.
Yeah, there's a huge difference there. And so, again, if he isn't that guy, now you've, again, set yourself back another cycle. And this is why it's so hard to get out of that rut. And, you know, you can say all you want, and I'm a big fan of what they do in New England. I think that's the best run organization in football. But if you can hit lucky on a Tom Brady, then you're set up too. That's the, you know, see, it works both ways. Mm. Now, as you look at the quarterback thing, Neil, I think that what's really intriguing to me is now you've got those two off the board, right? And, you know, you start looking around, where's the next one going to come? And there really wasn't another one, again, same deal, where you go, yeah, that, I think that guy can be a really good player, a really good starter in the NFL. So you start looking for, you know, guys that you can take a shot on. And I think Kaiser was that guy because his dimensions, his arm, all those things tell you. He has all the physical attributes. But, you know, again, production on tape, you don't see it all the time. But I thought Cleveland at that position, that was a good pick.
Well, Jeff, that really sort of leads me on to Cleveland and what they did in the first couple of days, because they have received praise and plaudits, and rightly so. I think Myles Garrett, number one overall, was a right move. And then when they trade back to 25, they still get Jabril Peppers, the safety from Michigan. Then they trade back into the first round, take an explosive tight end, David Njoku from Miami, who's really watching his film when they showed him on the draft coverage. He's a big wide receiver. He's Mike Evans. He's not necessarily a tight end, but he's a mismatch nightmare. And then we know that they say that they need a quarterback. We know they need a quarterback. And really, the clock doesn't start ticking on this front office until they found their franchise quarterback. They didn't want to pull the trigger in round one, but, you know, Kaiser in round two is worth a punt, isn't he?
Oh, look at it this way, right? If you said in a normal year, right, where your fourth pick is a fourth round selection, you'd take DeShone Kizer every time, right? So if you just look at their picks, now obviously because they had three first rounders, if you just looked at it as a normal draft would unfold, that's why what they did about accumulating picks I think was so smart for them with, you know, so many needs, that you got the best player in the draft with the number one guy, and I think he's the consensus best player in the draft. Mm. Then you go down, your next one is Peppers, who gives you tremendous flexibility, great athlete, can play a lot of places, kind of guy Greg Williams loves, the defensive coordinator. Then you get in what would be your third round pick, David Njoku, who has incredible athletic ability at tight end. Not a finished product yet, but like you say, Neil, a mismatch nightmare, big guy, tremendous athletic skills, can catch all of it, got to learn to block a little bit, but, you know, again, and then now you say, this would be my normal fourth round pick, I'm going to take the DeShone Kizer. You take that every day, every day. Mm. And that's, you know, again, I think that's where you see the wisdom or the plan that Sashi Brown and those guys have. And, you know, again, it's one thing. Mike Tyson said this one time. He said, everybody's got a plan until they get hit in the mouth.
Right.
Well, you know, Cleveland's been like that punch-drunk fighter over in the corner that they're just pummeling, right, for the last 6 months. And they stuck to their guns. They didn't bend to public opinion. They stayed with their plan. And I give them high marks for that.
Let's have a look at a couple of other picks that we might like from round one. I'll give you a couple, Jeff, that caught my eye in the top 10. I think Leonard Fournette to the Jags is going to provide that balance and that help for Blake Bortles. Mike Mayock on the draft coverage described him as the angriest runner to enter the NFL since Adrian Peterson. And also another running back, number 8 to Carolina, Christian McCaffrey from Stanford. And I'm thinking about him, Jeff, not necessarily from a running point of view, because he is a very, very good runner, but he can be a slot receiver. He can be a receiver out of the backfield. And when you think Cam Newton was a 52% passer last year, and I found this stat online today, Cam Newton completed 44 passes to running backs all last season, Jeff. Tom Brady completed 15 to running backs in the Super Bowl alone. I think if you add McCaffrey to Carolina's attack, as long as David Shuler is willing to be more versatile than we've seen in the past, that could be exciting.
Yeah, and again, when you look at this pick, you say, what does he bring to you? And, you know, there was a lot of question about his size and durability. I mean, there's all that stuff. Everybody, they're trying to knock every guy, right? But when you look at this kid's production, you're talking about historic production as a college player. Brings you a return game that you haven't had. And I think, Neil, like you say, one of the reasons why Cam didn't throw the ball to his backs is because who do you have? Mm. I mean, those guys, you don't have that kind of back in Carolina. So now you do, and I think this will help not only Cam and his completion percentage and, you know, their ability to move the chains. If you look at Cam Newton, his strength is what? Pushing the ball vertically. He's a great deep ball thrower, has been since he was, you know, in junior college at Blinn Junior College. But where he's deficient is in the intermediate zone, and really he's looking at, right now Olsen is the only guy he has for that, the tight end.
Right.
Now you add the dimension of this back who you can get out free release on third downs, and I mean, he now can provide not only help for Cam, but help for an offensive line that struggles to protect for those deep throws. You know, you're talking about seven-step drops where you got to protect for a long time. And I think this is a good move. The critical thing is exactly what you hit. Mike Shula's not been known for his imaginative ways to use players.
Right.
Right? So, again, I think this is going to be interesting to see how much they take advantage of this kid's rare skills.
Thanks, Jeff. I knew it was one of the Shulas. Get there in the end. I went a bit too far back, I think. Never mind.
But, hey, it's all good. It's all
you knew
good.
You knew what I meant.
And
you,
I knew exactly
I didn't
what you
need to, I didn't need to highlight. You just corrected me. That is the old pros way of doing it. You correct by giving the right name without actually raising awareness of it. But I'll call it anyway. I got it wrong. So there we go.
All right. Now, before we go any further, I got to jump in here and I got to say, this is the guy I love in the first round.
Yeah, go for it. That's what I was going to ask.
And the Jets fans kill me, right? Because they're always asking us, are we really just a tire fire or a slurry fire? Whatever it was we said one time about him.
Right.
But I'm going to tell you something. Taking that kid in the first round.
Jamal Adams.
Adams, yeah, from LSU. Man, oh, man, is he a football player.
Yeah.
I mean, he is a great football player. And the thing that you talk to the LSU people about the kid, and they don't just rave about his football. They rave about his leadership. They rave about his character. They rave about, you know, again, you're talking about LSU now.
Right.
LSU, you look at the NFL roster, there's a ton of guys came out of LSU. You know, Beckham and Landry and Tyrann Mathieu and
three in this,
I mean,
first round.
You're talking about this place cranks them out, right? Well, the guy that they talk about that left the biggest impression at LSU is Adams, this kid.
Mm.
So if he has left a bigger impression than Patrick Peterson and some of those other guys that are, you know, Pro Bowlers every year, I think that's a great pick for the Jets.
Jeff, at 19, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers took Alabama tight end O.J. Howard. And when you watch the draft coverage, they were talking about teaming him with DeSean Jackson and Mike Evans and Jameis Winston at quarterback and Doug Martin in the backfield. And I was screaming at the television set, don't forget Cameron Brait had 70-odd catches last year, or 67 catches at tight end. This Tampa Bay team, Jeff, is, I mean, not labeling them a finished product, but they are going to be exciting to watch. And they were a team that grew last year. They grew defensively as the second half of the season went on. They're going to be really exciting to watch in 2017.
Well, if they can stop anybody.
Right.
Because
right.
They're going to have to outscore folks, because they did not help a defense that needed help in the draft, in my opinion. Now, I think if you're Tampa and you're sitting there at 19 and you're looking at the board before the draft starts, you're saying there ain't no way O.J. Howard's going to be on the board at 19.
Mm.
And it just fell that way. So you're sitting there and you go, this is too good to believe. This guy's so good, we got to take him. At his position, he's so good, we got to take him. And, like, I agree with you in terms of what he'll bring to that team. Now, he's more of a complete tight end than anybody that's come out in the draft, in my opinion, recently.
Mm.
I mean, he is a guy to block you. He can play in line, but he can also do all the other stuff, all the, you know, stuff that everybody wants today, was flex him out and use him in a slot and all that other stuff. Got high character kid, all that. So great pick in the first round. I think, again, like you say, imagine, and I know Dirk Cutter, because he was the head coach at Arizona State when we played him at Hawaii in the Hawaii Bowl, and Dirk Cutter loves multiple tight end sets. And I think this kid is going to really create a situation where the Bucks are like that team that the Patriots were when they had Gronk and Hernandez. That kind of, you know, again, that kind of dynamic tight end duo that can beat you in a lot of ways.
Jeff, before we move on a little bit deeper into the draft, just on the first round, I thought it was nice. This was a business night. This was a night when teams were stocking their rosters. But I thought there was some nice moments in there. Garrett Bowles, the tackle out of Utah, came on stage after being picked by the Denver Broncos, brought his baby boy on with him. Tack McKinley came out with a photo of his grandma who died, and he promised her that he would go on to the NFL. He was so fired up. I honestly thought he was going to headbutt the commissioner at one point. And I thought there was a nice touch ahead of the Steelers pick. There was a tribute to Dan Rooney. It was a night of business, but I thought it was nice to have a few of those bits of emotion in there. And when you see somebody like McKinley, you realize just what it means for players to get to the NFL.
Well, I agree with you. And again, in terms of the Tack McKinley thing, and I'm sure that the NFL Network and maybe the advertisers wished he would have headbutted the commissioner and not dropped the F-bomb.
Yes. That's a little easier to say.
The only thing that I thought when all that went down was I thought to myself, Atlanta, you got some work to do.
I did think that as well with him, yes. Because Dion tried to calm him down, didn't he?
Yeah, and again, it's one of those deals where if you're that, and I understand, I get it, right? I know where you came from. I know the fact you slept on the floor. I know the story. Mm-hmm. But you're not the only guy that's ever come into the NFL, white, black, or right. indifferent, with a story.
Right.
There are a lot of guys that have come in. And now, again, how you react to things is so really important. So I think I would be shocked if the football department at the Falcons isn't getting together with their player development guy right now and saying we got to help this kid channel that, because you know, again, raw emotion's beautiful. I thought Deshaun Watson, when he read the note from his mother when he got picked, and he broke down in tears. I mean, you understand what this means to these kids, and it's more than the money. It's all of it. It's what they've worked and dreamed of since they were small children, and then to have it all play out like that on live TV, it's incredible.
Jeff,
it is absolutely incredible.
Let's watch this draft thing unfold over the next coming years, though, because it's a bit like the touchdown celebration thing where it was good for a while and then all of a sudden players are pulling socks out of their pens out of their socks and phones out of the goalposts. When you've got people bringing on babies and pictures of family members, I mean, it's great as a one-off or as a sort of occasional thing, but the NFL won't want everyone to be like show and tell, bringing something onto stage with them.
No, I agree with you, but I hope we never lose the like you say, the raw emotion of it, you know.
I agree.
And because it is such an amazing time, and I don't know if any other sport really makes it the spectacle that the NFL does. You know, I mean, when you go out and sign a premiership player, yeah, obviously there's a lot of fanfare that goes with that, but I mean, it's not like you're sitting there as Here we are, we're Leicester City, we're Man U, we're Man City, we're whoever, and we're all sitting there wondering, you know, like, okay, who are they going to take, right? That's kind of the beauty of the whole system, you know? I mean, the baseball draft, you sleep right through it. I mean, nobody
right.
even knows, because they draft like 30 rounds. The football draft is really, really, really unique, and the way it's structured and the way they've now created an event, which the NFL is better than any league in the world at doing, that now has become a whole television season in itself.
Let's talk a little bit, not too much, because I don't want to load this podcast up with chat about some people who've been in trouble, because I think overwhelmingly the majority of players in the NFL are great ambassadors, and we have been very fortunate to work with a number of them over the years. So you know, people like Christian Kirksey, Thomas Morstead. I mean, we could go, I could sit here and make a three-hour podcast just listing names of great guys. But there were players in this draft with some red flags, Jeff. We saw Dede Westbrook taken by Jacksonville. He's had off-the-field issues. The wide receiver, who was one of the best in the nation last year, by all accounts, didn't even make it through one of the 15-minute meetings at the Combine before he got kicked out by one of the teams. You know, Dalvin Cook has had issues as well. Caleb Brantley, the defensive tackle, fell all the way to the sixth round. Cleveland might still rescind that pick. And then, of course, we had Joe Mixon with the Cincinnati Bengals. Now, if you follow me on Twitter, you'll know that I argue with people on the train about the values of the NFL versus cricket. But one of the things I also said over the weekend was that, I'm sorry, but Joe Mixon's drafting and selection is a black eye on the Cincinnati Bengals. And I've even had text messages from longtime Bengals fans, Jeff, saying to me, what do I do with this? Do I support the team? If I support the team, am I supporting the player? I really don't know how I feel about this because it kind of leaves me feeling a little bit sick. I mean, I think, you know, I'm a bit too stuck in my ways with this, but I thought that was a Joe Mixon when he got booed. I thought, well, that's quite right on for me.
Well, I'm gonna just kind of go one up on you. I think it's a black eye for the Cincinnati Bengals. I think it's a black eye for the National Football League.
Yep.
And that video is so disgusting and so damning. I mean, here's the complete irony of it to me. You got a guy like Ray Rice, who was a player in your league, did the same thing, and he can't play in the league anymore.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the league hasn't said you can't play, but that he's hands off, right? Nobody's touching him. Here's a young kid, does it, and he gets to be drafted. I mean, I don't like it. I agree with Charlie Casserly. He wouldn't be on my board. I know this when I was in Kansas City. There was a guy, and he's probably going to be a Hall of Famer, that Coach Vermeil wrote across the board, no way, no way, right? He was just not going to take it. We're not going to take a guy with his history. So you make a decision when you do this. Now, this is kind of typical for Cincinnati because they're used to dealing with these kinds of guys. But now you mix him in with Vaughn, you know, that's just perfect, and here we go.
Pac-Man. Right?
Yeah, I mean, that's been, they have, though, that's kind of been their MO. They'll take the bad guys.
Hmm.
Well, you know, again, my question would be, when's the last time you won a Super Bowl?
Right.
Taking those kind of guys.
And Jeff, so, I think it's, you know, I got quite a bit of backlash on Twitter from that. And you can, I say this to the fans, you can have your own beliefs on people, or and a lot of people are, well, everyone deserves a second chance. Maybe it's just me. I think there's a certain line where, actually, do you know what? You're not entitled to a second chance just because that's what everyone says. And you watch that video and it's disgusting. I've even said the same thing. I might have an awkward situation this summer, Jeff. Now he's signed for the New Orleans Saints, where I have to sit down and interview Adrian Peterson. And I said on Sky Sports that I would never cheer for Adrian Peterson again because of all that stuff that, you know, with his kid and how that went down. So maybe it's just me, but those are my opinions. Those are my kind of thoughts on it. And you're right, though, with the Bengals. I mean, you talk about trying to avoid a stereotype. This is a team we've said has discipline issues. It was the meltdown at the end of that game against the Pittsburgh Steelers, you know, in the playoffs a couple of years ago. And here they are signing and drafting Joe Mixon. Marvin Lewis must just feel like he can fix everybody.
Well, I think that's just the way they look at it. They're a quote, a second chance team. Yeah. But, you know, again, all that said, as talented as they've been in years, how many Super Bowls have they won?
Right.
And I think that's where you got to look at this. Now, again, I'm going to hit a little closer to my own home and say, you know, the Raiders, that, with their 24th pick, you know, I mean, excuse me, the 24th pick in the draft, their first rounder, you know, they go out and get a guy that's got
Gary and Conley,
you know, a legal thing looming over the over his head. And when you see that happen, because you're talking about a guy who, if all the allegations are true, he, forget about having him for camp. He may be in jail.
Right.
Now, when this kind of thing comes out, you can bet, and each of these clubs have their own security department, all of it, right? You can bet that the Raiders dug as deep as they could, as fast as they could, to try and find out what they think the story was. Mm. So Reggie McKenzie has got to have a comfort zone with what he found out in order to take a kid like that in the first round.
Yeah.
But we'll see how it plays out.
You have to be right. You have to have done your homework and realize that some of the allegations are false. And, you know, I think that's another thing, Jeff, with a lot of these allegations, and they go through a legal process. There's a fair amount of he said, they said, he said, she said. And, you know, I think this was a thing that was pointed at me on Twitter over the weekend. Well, it's because with Joe Mixon, there's video evidence. Well, partly, yes. I mean, that's why Ray Rice will never play in the NFL again, Jeff. I mean, there's always a grey area in some legal cases, you know, whether it's Aaron Hernandez. I mean, we're going deep and off topic here, but, you know, did Aaron Hernandez was acquitted of the double murder charge that came following the original one? There's still that grey area. Did he do it? Didn't he? We'll never really know. When there's video evidence like that, that's why you do form a stronger opinion, I think.
No question, because it's right there for you.
Right.
And doesn't, again, you're talking about degrees of bad, but I mean, when it's right there for you, and it's the, you know, it's that kind of issue, and it's something that it was really interesting. I saw Mixon interviewed by a female reporter in Cincinnati, and you could just feel in her voice, and I thought she handled it extremely well and tried to be above board and not. But you could just feel the disgust that she had for him as she talked to him. And, you know, I thought Mixon, frankly, in the interview, did about as good as you can do. Mm. I mean, he appeared contrite and he appeared humble and all those other things. But that's in front of the cameras. What really matters is it's like they say, your character is what you do when nobody's watching.
Right.
Well, you know, again, if these guys, now that may be the only time he'll ever do anything like that. He may spend the rest of his life, you know, working with, you know, a female. You know, thing about it is he's gonna carry that with him forever because it's so disgusting what's on that tape.
Let's broaden it out, Jeff, and look at some teams that we felt, you know, really knocked it out of the park. And we won't know. We won't know for a good few years. But we know where there were areas of need and, you know, where you can pick up value. I mean, we talked about Cleveland. I would throw a couple of early general managers out there. Chris Ballard, I thought, in Indianapolis, added some defensive pieces without it being like shoot for the stars headlines. John Lynch in San Francisco, he picks up extra draft picks. He gets Solomon Thomas and Reuben Foster in the first round and drafts a quarterback later on as well. I thought the Chargers with Mike Williams and Forrest Lamp give Philip Rivers some people on offense. Which teams did you like, Jeff, what they did over draft weekend?
You know, I thought that Lynch, for his first draft, you know, you're talking about the first time he's ever done it.
Yeah.
I thought he did an outstanding job. You know, I think you look at Solomon Thomas, obviously, I had Solomon Thomas going there anyway, you know, and you know, they had to really feel like they hit it out of the park with that one. And to get additional picks value picks with him, I think that's outstanding. Again, then to come down. Now, again, one of the things we're going to find out about Foster is just how bad that shoulder is.
Yes.
And that'll play, you know, that's what'll play out. Now, if he's healthy, you're talking about, again, two really, really good defensive player. I'm talking about two impact right now. I hear this term plug and play, and I hate that term. But you're talking about two guys that will make an impact from the day they walk in the door at training camp. So significant improvement defensively in San Francisco. More athletic, more violent, more, you know, I think just really, really good players. Now, down the line, okay, again, I think they were good down the line. I don't think they finished great. I'm not a big Beathard fan. I think to trade up and get him in the third, I think is a little strong.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I thought the Dolphins, one more time, you see evidence of the plan. You see, you know, what they know what their needs are. They focus on what they have to take care of. Charles Harris, you know, if you get a chance, go to, I think it's dolphins.com, and they talk to the kid after he got drafted. And I'm going to tell you something. I wanted to save it and put it out on Twitter because this, you know, to me it was like how you handle yourself after the pick. He even mentioned, he said, that this is me. No hype, no. He said, I'm just ready to go to work. And that's the kind of guy you're looking for.
Well, now, so Jeff, I think the Dolphins, like you said, importantly, it's a plan. They have a plan. Adam Gase is not trying to make them New England South, but he understands from being around enough people that were in that Patriots organization that you have to have intelligent, tough players who love playing football. And the thing that you read about any Dolphins selection they tried to make was, is football important to him? And that was the answer with Charles Harris. And in the same way, whenever you look at a Falcons player with Dan Quinn, you want speed and toughness. I think with the Dolphins now, football has to be important to everyone they bring into that building. And I think they're hoping that makes a difference on Sunday.
Well, yeah, again, because part of that is because you got to remember where these kids are. All right, you're a young millionaire in Miami. Boy, there's a lot of ways you can go bad, right?
Yep.
So if football's not important to you, it's too easy to fall off that, you know, fall off the wagon. So you look at Raekwon McMillan and Tankersley; those are good football players, right? Asiata fits a knee, big physical guy. I mean, that's the way you draft to me. And I thought they did a really, really good job. We talked about the Raider draft. I thought Seattle had a sneaky good draft, you know, because they didn't have any first-round picks. But what they did with where they pick, I thought that was really, really a well-done draft. And you found guys that were, quote, fit the Seahawk profile. Mm-hmm. And, again, I thought the Seahawks had a good draft. Interesting draft by the Packers, I thought, you know. And when you look at it, you say – you kind of scratch your head some of it, you go, wow, that's a really good idea. That was really good. I think when you look at teams like the Packers with Teddy Thompson, you just kind of always grade them a little bit higher because it's like Ozzie Newsome. You grade his drafts just a little bit higher because of his track record.
Yeah, you trust them.
Yeah, exactly. And they've done it for so many years. And then you look at the other end of the spectrum, you know, and you look at, like, for example, the Rams. Now, they're hamstrung because of this, you know, because they had to give up so many picks. But as you look at that, I don't see an impact guy. Cooper Kupp, the kid out of Eastern Washington, is a really good 1AA college football player. But is he going to be how does that translate to the NFL? I mean, I just don't know. And so you look at them, and you know, you got to give them about a, you know, if you're great at it, you probably give them about a CC-. But again, that was one of the ones I didn't think had a very good draft. And again, obviously we talked about Chicago. It just that one is going to be a boom or bust one. It's all or nothing in that deal.
Jeff, what about the Chargers who I mentioned? They grabbed Mike Williams, big physical wide receiver out of Clemson, and then two interior linemen, Forrest Lamp from Western Kentucky at guard in the second round, Dan Feeney from Indiana at guard in the third round. Since 2010, no quarterback's been sacked more than Philip Rivers, 259 times. Jeff, when you think about the running game that they've got there now and they're starting to put some defensive pieces in place. I feel like Philip Rivers has had a lot of his years in San Diego wasted, but now they're starting to put some talent around him. What did you think of what the Chargers did?
You know, I agree to the point of when you look at it, and I thought it was really interesting. They got kind of blasted a little bit for, at least over here, for taking Williams. And, you know, because they said, well, you know, how's he going to fit into the deep receiving corps? I'm going to tell you something. You look at that bunch of receivers that they've had, how many times in the last 2 or 3 years, Neil, that we've been broadcasting, that we say, boy, they need help at receiver, right? So I think that kid is a NFL-ready guy. And, you know, I look at the Chargers, and I think that obviously where you got to upgrade that football team the most is inside. And you look at those two guys that you mentioned, and I think both of them are the kinds of inside players that they need. You know, again, Lamp is a very, very, very good football player. Now, he played at Western Kentucky. Don't let that fool you. You look at the kid's tape, and you see a guy who's athletic, who's tough, who can bend, who has all the properties that you look for. And then again, Feeney has played in an offense at Indiana where he's had to do pro-style things. So San Diego Charger pro-style things. So I think both those picks are really, really good picks, and I think that's a step. I think they drafted well. I wouldn't give them an out, you know, like a crazy grade, but I think they drafted well. I think, you know, when you look at it too, Neil, one of the other teams I want to talk about as you go through this is, you know, the Saints.
Yep.
I like what they did with the first pick, right? Because now you think about you pair Delvin Bro on that, you know, with that young corner.
Marshon Lattimore.
Yeah. You're talking about Lattimore. I mean, it's kind of a toss between Lattimore and his teammate, who's the best one, right?
Right.
He's a guy that you can lock up, play man-to-man, and now you put Delvin Bro on the other side, you're significantly better in the back end. You know, Ramczyk is a guy that I think is a little bit of a reach. You know, you got to, again, know the history. He's had injury problems. He actually quit football once, and I don't, you know, again, he's a run blocker. I watched him play live at Wisconsin against Purdue, and, you know, he was dominant in that game, but it wasn't against high-level player he was playing against. But I don't know about the ability to translate that to the NFL game as a right tackle. I think that's going to be one. He's big enough. He's got all that stuff. But, you know, again, I think that one may be a reach. I liked what they did with Kamara. I think Kamara was a really undervalued running back.
Even though you've got Ingram and Peterson, Jeff?
Yeah, because I'll tell you why. We got him, everybody, and this is really interesting, Neil. If you think about Adrian Peterson, which Adrian Peterson did they pay for?
Right.
Did they pay for the guy that will walk into the Hall of Fame one day that, you know, that was a perennial 1,200-yard rusher? Or is he the Adrian Peterson that we've watched for basically the last 2 years?
The one who averaged 1.5 yards per carry last year.
That's the question, right? Now, if you get the guy that everybody loved, you know, and that we all love to watch, hey, great. And now you got another one behind it. But if you don't, now, again, I think that was a situation where you needed to go. I really do. And I know they have huge defensive issues. But Alex Anzalone, if he can stay healthy, will help him at linebacker. He's a good player. He can rush the passer. He's got that kind of ability. You know, again, but I think when you look at it, I liked what they did. I really thought that they started out good. Again, if Ramczyk can be a player, if he develops to be the guy that they think he can be, then you got a solid right tackle for years. You get a high quality running back and a shutdown corner. That's a pretty good draft.
Let's talk about our newest Brits in the NFL then, Jeff. We had Obi Melanfonwu, the safety from Connecticut, go to the Oakland Raiders in the second round, number 56 overall. And then in the fifth round, we had offensive tackle Jermaine Illuminor from Texas A&M, probably play guard actually in the NFL. Fifth round, 159th overall to the Baltimore Ravens. First of all, Jeff, Jermaine is just a tremendous story. He first saw the NFL watching the Giants and the Dolphins play the International Series game at Wembley Stadium 2007. And he was watching that game on TV, decided he wanted to give American football a try. So here we are now. Here's the first in the NFL from watching a regular season game in London. It's a huge achievement for him. It's fantastic.
I think it's a great story, and I think it's, again, an indication of what is out there. Mm-hmm. And when he got drafted, I put that out on Twitter. You know, big ups to him, and you know, again, it proves that they're out there. And it won't be the last,
will it?
No, I think it's going to be more and more. And again, what this does is, as you watch the success that these guys have started to have now, and you talk about Menelik, and you talk about Jack, and you talk about all of the guys now that are getting it done, they've created what has never been there before, and that's a pathway, a mm-hmm. clear path to the league, so that now some kid, you know, playing for the Kent Exiles or the, you know, the wherever, he can play on that field with no lines on it and practice and all, and just say, you know, why not me? Why not me? Now, a lot of things got to happen right, and you got to have a lot of ability. But again, it can happen. It's not a dream anymore. It's a reality.
Well, there's lots of them dreaming, Jeff. I know that for a fact. They're all dreaming of making it to the States and following in those footsteps, and good for those Brits on their way. Let me just ask you one last question as we wrap up. We had a lot of questions in the mailbag, but we had questions from Conor McGale, which we kind of answered, was about the 49ers and how they did in the draft. Tommy B., was asking about Deshaun Watson. We've talked a little bit about that. And Gareth Parfitt was asking about the Bears trading up unnecessarily one spot and Houston fixing the Osweiler error. So we've kind of covered a lot of the questions we had in the mailbag. You used a phrase just a moment ago, Jeff, which I want to finish on. You said NFL ready. You were talking about players who are NFL ready. So from the quarterbacks that we mentioned today, do any start in day one? And if not, who is the first to get a kind of decent stint at starting in the NFL?
Well, I'm going to say it this way. If they're starting day one, you don't want them starting day one.
There's a problem.
Not these guys.
Right.
There is a problem. So I think the one who stands the best chance to start day one is probably Deshaun Watson.
Okay.
And I don't – again – That's still a reach to me. Right. That is still a reach to me.
All right.
But again, you look at it, say, who you got to beat out? You got to beat out Tom Savage.
Right.
All right. Now, even in Chicago, Trubisky's got to get through Mike Glenn, and I think Mike Glenn is better than Tom Savage.
Yeah, and Mahomes has got to get past for all of Alex Smith's warts, he wins games. This is a playoff team. They don't want to be ripping everything up this season.
No.
Kaiser's probably going to play at some point, Jeff, because the Browns, although they've got a better offensive line this year, so maybe they don't get the quarterbacks hurt as much as they did in previous years. But the Browns seem to go through a selection of quarterbacks each year.
Yeah, and again, I think that if Kaiser, you know, the knock with Kaiser was, if you look at the Texas game, and if you're a draft nick, go look at his tape against Texas, and you'd say first round pick. Mm. But this is also a guy who lost to Navy. All right, now. Yeah, it's not all on him, but if you're that guy, then you're not. That's not happening.
A couple of other bits of news just to wrap up. I see that the Vikings are not going to exercise the fifth-year option on Teddy Bridgewater's contract. That's a shame, and really not a reflection on him, how he was playing, but a reflection on him and that devastating knee injury, which wiped out all of 2016, could wipe out all of 2017 for Teddy Bridgewater. And then a couple of other bits, Jeff. Marshawn Lynch is officially a Raider and Adrian Peterson officially a New Orleans Saint. Any thoughts on any of those bits and bobs?
Well, you know, it's hard for me to see. And it was interesting because when we talked to, you know, our guys with the Vikings, and they just said they just couldn't see, you know, remember Kyle Rudolph when we were in the Super Bowl? He said, I just can't see him playing in another uniform.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's kind of how I feel about it. It smacks to me of watching Earl Campbell at the end of his career go to play for the Saints, watching Joe Namath go to play, you know, in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
You know, guys that, you know, probably stuck around a year or two too long.
Well, they say that about Emmitt Smith, Jeff, didn't they? With Emmitt Smith was a shadow of his former self when he went to Arizona, and that's what the Saints would be hoping that Adrian Peterson isn't.
Yeah, and but I'm afraid that's probably the way it's going to play out. Mm. History would tell you that's the way it's going to play out. You look at some of the other things. Obviously, you feel devastated for Teddy Bridgewater because good guy and seemed to be right on the cusp of really breaking out in the league and again to have that kind of knee injury cut him at such a critical time in his career. And then all is good in the universe because the one player most born to be an Oakland Raider, Marshawn Lynch, comes home where he should have been all his career.
Oh, Jeff, I was interviewing.
That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying about that.
I interviewed Khalil Mack last week on the telephone, and it was the day that Marshawn Lynch was in the building, and I asked him about having Lynch back, and Khalil kind of, you could tell he did that thing where you put your hand over the phone and he's obviously asking the PR guy if we'd signed him yet. And his actual quote was, I don't know how it's all going to pan out officially, but once it's done, I'm glad he's on my team. He's one of those players that you want to only have to tackle in practice, and even then you don't really fancy it. But he's going to give that whole franchise a bolt of energy.
Without a doubt. And as a matter of fact, when it happened, I was staring at my Raider baseball cap, and the Raider logo on the front, the actual Captain Raider, whatever they call him, he winked at me, I swear to God. I'm so happy about it.
I'll have a pint of what you're drinking, Jeff. And as we wrap up, I didn't get drafted again. That's another year gone by. It's another year.
Well, you know what? Just keep getting your name out there. I know you've been working with the Ken Exiles in secret, and again, that our personnel people are on to you.
Yeah.
So I don't think you're getting any faster.
No.
But I think you're getting smoother.
I'm getting smarter. I tell you what, Jeff. Some teams.
If you were getting smarter, you wouldn't be out there with them young kids.
No, true, and there's there's a lot of mistakes that have probably been made over this past weekend in the NFL draft, but that would be a huge one. Jeff, anything else on the draft, the core? I think we're pretty much done, aren't we? We've covered all the bases there.
Yeah, I think it was, again, I it's such a wonderful time of the year. Yeah. And now there's renewed hope in most every city. I mean, there's a lot of hand wringing in Chicago, but I think in most every city you see how your football team has gotten better. You see evidence of, for a lot of teams, a plan. Now it's, they're like shiny new toys. The next step is get them to rookie minicamp and get them signed and get them to training camp, and away you go. Here we go, another season.
Get them on the field, and we're on our way. We're not far away then, Jeff. That's it for this week's Inside the Huddle then. Thank you for joining us. Until next week, Jeff, say goodbye to the good folks.
Aloha.